from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Good Friday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. It's August 30th, 2024, and we are taking you all the way up to 6:15 and Nats baseball pregame with Charlie and Dave about 4 hours 15 minutes from right now. Excited to talk to Armin Katayan, who's a great storyteller, was part of the Real Sports with Brian Gumbel crew for years. Armin Katayan on the show because he wrote a book about the state of college football and the business that it has always been, but is becoming more and more.
Now it's in the light, yeah.
He will be on the show at 5 o'clock to discuss that. We've got tickets for the final time this week to see Kevin Hart when he is performing at DAR Constitution Hall. You want to see live comedy in a great venue in town this coming month in September. Make sure you're listening to try to win those final two tickets we've got right at 4 o'clock ahead of the Blitz today. What's up, Danny?
Hey, buddy. So the kids are home from school today. I get it. The kids have been in school for almost 2 weeks, so we should probably just slow our roll and have a nice day off with the day off coupled on Monday. Again, I want everyone to know that I am in favor of the thing I'm supposed to be in favor of and opposed to all the right stuff, and I'm on your side, and I agree with you 100%. I will say, if I ever run for public office, I won't, but if I ever did, here would be my platform. The kids go to school. Whatever we got to do, people need extra money, people need more payment, whoever I got to talk to, those kids, they go to that school. If it's a weekday, we're going. Every time. Very few exceptions. Right around the Christmas holiday, maybe we'll do spring break. That was fun too. But we're going to go. It's going to be open, and it opens at a certain time, and it closes at a certain time. But we're going. That's my platform. But again, I agree with every one of you.
Good day overall.
Anyway, how's it going for you?
Seems like you're running hot today.
Yeah, it came a little red, but yeah.
I had a great time watching college football last night. I told you I was on my way to a high school football game when I left here.
Big football day for Grant.
Got postponed and rained out. So I did go over this morning at 10 a.m. because there was no school, to your point, and watched a little high school football with my son, which was nice, over at West Springfield High School today. But last night, I watched Colorado and North Dakota State. The Buffaloes and the Bison, very similar mascots, 31-26 final. Couple of thoughts from your guy.
Go ahead.
First of all, Travis Hunter, who is both a wide receiver and a cornerback, and is considered one of the top five players in America at both positions.
Rightly so.
Is an unbelievable talent. Now, he got away a couple of times with very obvious offensive pass interference, which I really didn't see anybody talk about or acknowledge or care about, but it was very clear to me a couple times, either pushed off. Or
yeah, the deep throw down the right sideline, start of the second half, there was some hand fighting, and then there was some pushing by one person.
The most obvious push off ever, but
he's
great.
He's really good.
He also
good.
Had a touchdown where he slung a guy to the ground back of the end zone, not called. Don't really care about that. That's not the point. The point is that guy is the best athlete on any field that he's going to be on this year. And I tweeted this last night. Here's what's scary about him. I'm not sure that there will be a better athlete on an NFL field next year when he's on it. Maybe Lamar Jackson or somebody like that, maybe. But there have not been talents like this. I don't remember anybody this side of Charles Woodson who could do it both ways. Champ Bailey, you remember, post-Woodson, 99, Washington drafted 7th overall to the University of Georgia. played wide receiver, played corner a little bit in college. Not to the same extent that Hunter does. And Bailey, even in the NFL, very, very limited capacity. But if you remember at the end of some lost seasons, I think it was the Spurrier time frame, they asked him to play on both sides of the ball. He caught some passes, was targeted as a wide receiver. You just don't see it. You don't. It's like the Shohei thing in football. It's too hard. People aren't good enough. Athletes, just as great as you are to do that in college, to do it in the NFL is a whole different ballgame. I think this guy could play both positions. I don't think he'll be a star at both, but why wouldn't you at least let him give it a try in the NFL early on to see if you could have him run some routes, take some screens for you, design stuff, but then also have him be a primary corner? Like, to me, corner first, receiver second. But why couldn't he do a little bit of both, Champ Bailey style?
I, the longer it goes, the more it's worth finding out. You know what I mean? Like, he's exceptional. Like, to me, the playmaking ability on offense is what it's easier to see. If that makes any sense. I guess he's graded higher as a corner, as a pro prospect, which is fine. But I'd like the football in his hands also. You know what I mean? Like, send him down the field a few times. Let's see what happens. Couple in breakers, couple crossers, maybe a go ball here or there. That dude is amazing.
First time I saw him catch a ball last night, he ran quite literally like a 7-yard stop route. Turned around, a little hitch, caught the ball. Then he shakes the defender for what would have been a 5-yard gain. Then the safety takes an angle that isn't perfect, so he outruns him. And he goes untouched into the end zone for a 41-yard touchdown. Now, in the league, a little bit different than against North Dakota State. I understand that. I'm not sitting here pretending like he'd be a 1,000-yard wideout and the best corner in football. I saw C.J. Gardner-Johnson, the defensive back for the Philadelphia Eagles, take issue with Robert Griffin, who had suggested that, you know, he should get to do both in the NFL or try to do both. And basically, Gardner-Johnson's point was, it's just different up here, man. I get it. He's good. He's talented. You guys are all fawning on him. But he basically said, nobody can do it up here the way he's doing it in college. And that's probably true if we're talking about majoring in both and being the number one receiver for a team and the corner that's going to shut down the best wide receiver. I'm just saying he should be your starting corner and be drafted in the top 5 or top 10, wherever he's going to go. And then also you should give him the occasional opportunity to touch the football. And you can't just throw him a screen every time he's out there. That's a tell. Mm-hmm. So you put him out there for 15, 17 snaps a game when you're in 11 personnel or you're spreading an offense out. And 3 or 4 times you throw him the football or you give him a pop pass or you get him in jet action and hand it to him. He's just too dynamic.
He's too good. Yeah, I mean, Deion Sanders obviously did that at the pro level. You mentioned Champ Bailey, Charles Woodson here and there. There have been guys who've, you know, sort of crossed that uncrossable threshold here and there because they were that exceptional. And who knows, maybe he's one of them. But I know this, just a couple things. North Dakota State, frisky. That was fun, right? Not a Division I team, whatever you call it, whatever the next layer down is, the subdivision or FBS or whatever the names have changed. It used to be 1AA. I don't know that. I know this. They had Colorado on their heels a little bit with a halftime lead and everything else. That was a close game. That was fun.
FCS, yeah, the football championship subdivision. But North Dakota State is really good. Mm-hmm. And I think if they played that game again right now, they'd be in that game too. Mm-hmm. The difference was Colorado's offense is prolific enough, and they just have athletes the likes of which Dakota State does not.
Yeah, there's nobody to stop Horn or Hunter. They don't have that.
But North Dakota State is probably a better, more complete football team in a sense. And because of that, hung. I mean, they were up 20-17 at the half. It was 20-14 with a minute or so to go in the second quarter. And it ended up being a good game. Now, to Colorado's credit, while I knocked their defense, which was abhorrent, I thought, in the first half, they gave up all of 6 points in the second half.
Yeah.
It was late in the game after they were pitching a shutout. And I think they held North Dakota State to sub-100 yards over a quarter and change. So they did a lot of things after halftime, made some adjustments that were very, very smart. But I also thought the officiating late was weird. I thought North Dakota State shot themselves in the foot a bunch by continually bringing in their backup quarterback to do some Tim Tebow-y type stuff when Cam Miller, their starter, was just picking Colorado apart early.
It's not like he couldn't move either.
No, he was good.
Yeah, like, listen, I don't know anything. I'm not sitting there. I'm not writing about North Dakota State. I'm not covering him every day.
He ran for 80 yards.
Yeah, I saw enough. That guy, the guy that was 18 out of 22 for 277 and who ran pretty well, that guy. Not the other guy, that guy.
Where are you on Shador Sanders, who threw for 445 yards and 4 touchdowns?
This is such a tough question because I know that he's an excellent college football player. I am sure of that, right? That He's doing some of those things, like that one long pass he threw after, what was it, 15 seconds, Caleb Williams style, where he ran around, dodged seven people, pump faked four dudes, heading left off his, you know, side foot, slung it a dime 50 yards down the field to somebody. You go, okay, he's a better athlete than everybody there at the college level, especially against North Dakota State. He's going to be a pro. I just don't know yet, but it's fun to watch. He's electric at a minimum.
My only concern, I think as a player, he's going to end up being a top-of-the-board type pick. He's an athlete. He extends plays. He's a pocket passer. It's like all the stuff I love. He is a great arm. I don't know if I want to deal with the circus that's going to come with him. And you got Deion Sanders on podcasts already. I was watching a clip today where he says, we're going to Eli Manning this thing. You know, there's certain cities he's not going to. Somebody asked, what picks do you expect Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback, and Travis Hunter, the dual threat we were just talking about, it might be the best player in America overall. Like, where do you expect those guys to go? And he said they're both going in the top four. You know, one will probably go one, the other won't go after pick four. He said, but it's going to get complicated because we're also going to dictate where these guys end up. Whatever that is, I'm not interested in. I didn't like it when John Elway did it. In fact, my dad despised John Elway his entire career after that. I'm not quite going to go that hard in the paint. But I didn't like it when Eli Manning did it. Like, it's not for me. And I won't like it when Shedeur Sanders does it. But also, just the fact that it's Deion, and he's jumping on the mic after the game to talk to the crowd, and people are referring to him as Coach Prime. No, thank you. We are here to do football stuff. The sideshow, the credentials from CNN, like whatever else, I'm not interested. So that would be really complicated for me. He's got to be head and shoulders better than the other quarterbacks.
And he might be, honestly.
For me to be able to engage in the business of Shedeur Sanders. But I think he's a really good player.
I know that. Yeah, for sure. Like, they are, for good, bad, or indifferent, it's like that old Howard Stern phenomenon where the people that like it listen, the people that don't like it listen, and everybody in between listens to find out what both sides are talking about. What I've got going with Colorado right now. I'm torn. Like, Sanders, Hunter, like, these are unbelievably exciting players to watch. And Deion Sanders is drawing attention, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. I find myself not being able to help it. Like, if you told me a team that's not in the top 25 is playing an FCS team on Thursday night, I go, maybe I'll catch some. Maybe I'll watch it if it's on. That's not what happened. Every second I could that I wasn't dealing with kids or whatever, I'm sitting down watching that contest. That says something.
Brandon Ayuk got paid after we got off the air yesterday. So we had Adam Peters on at 4:15. If you guys missed that interview, we'll re-rack some of it for you coming up in just a bit on Grant and Danny, and we'll break down some of what Adam Peters told us. But we asked him about Brandon Ayuk and the possibility of a trade. He basically dodged it, said, I'm not going to talk about that next question. Well, it's pretty clear that the book had already been slammed shut that they were putting together on Ayuk, because it was a couple hours later that we found out he agreed to a four-year, $120 million contract with San Francisco, $30 million annual average value, tied with Tyreek Hill, back into the top five highest-paid wide receivers in the game. What was the most compelling thing about the story, though, last night, if you noticed, was all the newsbreakers that were on the text chain, Schefter and our buddy Rossini and some others, they right away put out that Brandon Ayuk accepted the offer that was made to him on August 12th, 17 days earlier, that he said no at the time he didn't want to take. And then immediately after that came out, Ayuk's agent said that's not true. So you've got the team clearly saying...
Yeah, I wonder who told who what there, yeah.
We paid him what we said we were going to pay him. He just came around 3 weeks later. And then the agent said that's not how this worked out at all.
Ho-hum. Much ado about nothing. Everyone's going to have their side, their version, their posturing. The agent wants the full amount out there. The team wants the, yeah, this is what the guarantees are. The truth is somewhere in the middle. And we had an odyssey, didn't we? Now, it's not an odyssey. It's not an audible thing where you're going on a journey. It's an odyssey, an actual long journey. Just to get to a place that made the most sense all along, right? Really good player for a really good team. Oh, okay. Everyone knows he's good. There's a huge contract offer. It's not going to be the one that resets the market. It's not going to be, north of CeeDee Lamb, not going to be north of Justin Jefferson, but it's in that ballpark. You're going to be paid in that top five type range, and that's what happened. Ta-da, here we are. It was always made the most sense.
My sincerest hope is that his social media shtick and all of the nonsense that he pulled publicly on the internet does not become the norm. That when players are in disputes with teams, they conduct themselves professionally and they don't do this childish emoji era behavior that Brandon Ayuk did. And I tweeted this last night, and a lot of people said, well, it worked. Why wouldn't other players do it? It worked. And to that I say, no, it didn't. Who says it worked? There's no causation between him posting a picture of Commanders practice or videos of calling Jaden Daniels or tweeting at Mike Tomlin or any of the other crap that he was doing and getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
They both happened, but Justin Jefferson did none of that and got paid. CeeDee Lamb did zippy of that and got paid. In my opinion, he got paid yesterday because deadlines make deals.
Yeah, and he's really good, and the team is really good.
He got paid because it's time to play football. Camp is over, the preseason is over, the roster is formed, and week one preparations in NFL buildings begin this weekend.
And add another one for San Francisco, by the way, and their long list of doing it this way and getting it done. Now, whether it's the truth is that's the August 12th offer, it's actually the August 17th offer, I don't care about that sort of stuff. Agents do, the player does, or whoever. But San Francisco, multiple times over, whether it's with Bosa, now Ayuk, and there are a couple other examples, Deebo Samuel, I think, they've basically said, this is what it's going to be, and they've waited. They've held their cards. They haven't gotten desperate. They've been smart and, you know, maybe taken some flack for it at times, but the players in camp, or not camp, but the players in tow, and they go and they're able to play football before the season.
Yeah, and if you're Brandon Ayuk, it wasn't a net loss. I saw people beating up on him as if he didn't get what he wanted. You still got paid a huge contract. You're right up there with Tyreek Hill at $30 million a year, and you didn't have to practice at all at training camp, which isn't fun for a veteran, and you didn't have to play at all in the preseason. And now you line up and you go to work in week one. Now, I guess it's possible that if he shows up and he's not in great shape or he wasn't preparing himself, then maybe we don't see him until week two. But at that position, knowing the offense as well as he does, as important as he is to the team, my guess is he'll be out there when they play their first game of the season next weekend. But, you know, the publicly tweeting at Tomlin, the posting of photos and video calls with Jaden Daniels, pics of other teams' practices, call me old-fashioned or crazy. A, it's not for me, and B, I really don't believe it helped him any here. I think that happened, and also he got a contract, but I would just point to every other wide receiver that's been paid this offseason that didn't do it that way and took a little bit less of a public beating for it, by the way. You can actually make the case that they were better off. Like Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, these guys that did it in a more professional manner. Now, it also didn't hurt him, it doesn't look like or appear. It doesn't seem like it cost him money or cost him.
Well, there's no money off the contract or something, right?
It's not like they don't want to do business with him anymore, but I just saw people taking victory lap, like, oh, he forced their hand, oh, it worked. No, it didn't.
Yeah, a lot less tweeting or Instagramming or TikToking, whatever you want to call it, and a lot more the football season starts next week,
and
he hasn't practiced yet. Like, that's more it. And they'd like him in the fold because they're at their best when he's there, which is pretty intuitive, pretty obvious now.
But
right?
He was almost traded a couple times.
Yeah.
You know, there were teams trying to acquire him. I mean, this was not for people that are now looking back at it and going, oh, this was all much ado about nothing. And he was always going to be a 49er and this contract was inevitable. I don't think so. I think there was a moment where they tried to trade him to the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, that they wanted to trade him to the Patriots and the Browns, you know, where the Commanders are talking and they're close. In fact, Diana Rossini of The Athletic reported yesterday that the 49ers actually tried to trade a third-round pick to the Denver Broncos for Cortland Sutton. And if they could have pulled off the deal, Denver said no, that they would have shipped the pick, gotten Sutton, and then moved Ayuk to Pittsburgh. That was kind of the two-pronged plan.
Hmm.
They just couldn't get the receiver to replace him. And that goes back to what you and I have kind of been screaming all along, which is, they're a Super Bowl caliber team with aspirations of lifting the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year, finally. They're not going to take a big step back in 2024 when they've got a closing window to just get draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
They needed something else that helps them in the immediate season in return, and they weren't able to figure it all out, so they decided $30 million for Ayuk, keeping him around, is the best answer.
Yeah, there are a lot of teams that could absolutely afford to be a little bit worse this year at the expense of the future. Here in Washington, for example, they've given up two guys that would have contributed something. Who knows exactly what John Ridgeway or Jahan Dotson would have done this year? Who knows? But that's more important to them to have future capital, future draft assets, you know, future young pieces for a group that's going to be patient. I know they hate the word rebuild and will never say it, but we can kind of look at it and say, yeah, that's what it looks like, right? It looks like, you know, prioritizing draft capital in the future, even if it means you might not be as good come, you know, week one.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Adam Peters with us yesterday discussed what success looks like for the Commanders this year. I want to get into that next on The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey, and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We're taking you up to 6:15 tonight. Charlie, Dave, Nats pregame at that time. First pitch of the Cubs at the Nats here at Nationals Park just down the road in the Navy Yard. Set for 6:45. And I believe the weather should be mostly clear by that point. We'll get our official update on that before we get out of here on Grant and Danny. Armin Katayan talking college football at 5. The book that he wrote is getting rave reviews. They did years, 2-3 years worth of work and research, it seems like, and have relationships with so many powerful people in and around college football. It's just a really, really well-done project. So we'll talk to him about the State of the Union of college football before the big first weekend of the season. That's at 5 o'clock here on The Fan. And remember, at 4 ahead of the Beltway Blitz, we do have those tickets if you want to win tickets to see Kevin Hart. The time is 4 o'clock today, DAR Constitution Hall. Great venue to see comedy. I've got two heavy rotation comedians right now.
Okay.
That I've been, like, my favorite ever.
Seeing a lot of content on, right?
Yeah, Dave Chappelle's my one seed. Anything he does, I'm going to watch and generally love. But right now, Shane Gillis is in heavy rotation.
Mm-hmm.
He's the it guy.
Yep.
I watched that show Tires he did on Netflix.
Was it any good?
I thought it was funny. It's not going to be for everyone.
Okay.
My wife saw it for 3 minutes. It's very vulgar.
Out.
A lot of bad words. She did not like it. And then Nate Bargatze, who's the opposite, I think. He's pretty clean.
Crystal clean. Yep.
Yeah. He is as funny and smart. You have to be when you're clean, I think, as any comedian in the game. But those are two guys right now I'm working with.
So Bargatze's so funny. Well, him and Shane Gillis actually both have this. They come across as, I don't know anything. I'm just sort of out here just chatting with you. That is a guy's. And I'm not saying they're like putting on an act. Like they're not doing what Dan Whitney does, who's the cable guy.
They're technicians.
Yeah. They're not big giant frauds like Dan Whitney. But what they are is really, really, really smart. And they're able to take these little things and you go, I'm not sure if I should laugh at that. And then within 7 or 8 seconds, you are guffawing. I always tell the story about Bargatze when he was way pudgier, had kind of a weirder haircut. We did the show in upstate New York at a winery. It was a showcase style. He was headlining. He did like a 30-minute closing set. Seven of us did like 5, 10 minutes or whatever up front. And we just were eating bowls of, you know what, just shoveling the worst of the worst. Well, coming back, like riding to Dangerfield, like, oh, it's a really tough crowd. They're kind of snooty. They don't really like anything. Within a minute and a half, he's got people snorting red wine out of their nose. Just, and I go, that's a star. Now I know it. And he's done as much as you can do.
He's
hilarious.
A rocket ship the last couple of years. Adam Peters was on our show yesterday. If you missed that interview, you got to find a way when we're done tonight to podcast the whole thing, because he was both courteous with his time, but also kind of fun. Threw the ball around with us, and we enjoyed it. But we asked him about defining success this year and what his metrics are going to be, how he's going to consider this year a win or a loss. This is what Peter said right here on Grant and Danny yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, I think you do get into trouble looking too far down the road. And so, again, you know, you're probably going to get a radio show full of cliches here. But we're really, every single day we're trying to get better. And I think that's how we look at it. And if we got better today, we had a really good day of practice today. Guys looked really good. The guys were into it before we have a 3-day break before we get back and start working for Tampa. So we went out and got a lot better today, I thought. And that's the outlook you have each day, each week. You're getting better and you're stacking up days. And then if you do that and you get better each day, you're going to like what it looks like at the end of the year.
So that sounds, and he even acknowledged this, just like the most football cliche, yuck, kind of cringy, every day is its own day and all we can do is win today, 1-0, woo. I actually think in their case, that may very well be how they're viewing this whole thing. And the bigger picture point, which is actually, I think, the takeaway from that answer is, there is no real expectation. There is nothing they've got to do or accomplish this year to consider this a win. They don't have an owner in Josh Harris breathing down their neck that they've got to go stockpile victories. Now, Harris did say in his press conference that he did, and Darius, maybe we could grab this, if you could find it from Sunday night, that he wants the team to be better than they were last year. He didn't say meaning the 4 wins, but he did reference they won 4 games. So my guess is if they win 2 or 3 games, he's going to be pretty upset. Mm-hmm. And he should be, honestly. Yeah. But assuming you win more than 4 games, I don't think there's anything else they've got to do to show Josh Harris that they're headed in the right direction. And if that's really the case, if this is about development, if this, like it is for me, is solely really about Jaden Daniels and making sure you found the guy, or did your draft class excel? Is Brandon Coleman a left tackle? By the end of the year, is Luke McCaffrey look like a weapon at wide receiver? Did you find a solution for life after John Allen, who doesn't have any guaranteed money beyond this season, with Johnny Newton? Like, if those things are yeses and you went 5-12, so what? Mm-hmm. Who cares? There is no pressure, which is a really nice thing when you're a GM and a head coach. But the way that materializes, in my opinion, Danny, is that each day you can kind of live the way he's talking about. That cliche that most teams actually don't get. The Packers can't view it that way. The Steelers can't view it that way. But here, where you picked second last year and you've been bad for 30 years and you got a new owner and a baby quarterback who just came out of the womb ready to play some football here in his first days on the job in the NFL, yeah. You can kind of say, was today a good practice? All right, then we're doing fine. Because there's really not that expectation.
Yeah, if you want to eventually win the 100-meter dash, we're in the crawling phase. So, yeah, if today we took our first steps, that's totally fine. I think that's a good way to do it. You can look up at the end of a certain amount of time. How long is that honeymoon? We don't know. We talked about this all the time as the end of the Snyder era happened and the beginning of the Hog ownership group. We're going, at some point, the honeymoon's going to end. It hadn't yet for me. I pinch myself. We have audio from Josh Harris, not on some phone call with a gaming commission bragging about Carson Wentz, but just addressing the media like a human being. I'm not taking it for granted yet. Adam Peters called our show, called us each by our names. Not that I matter at all, but just like the wherewithal and the emotional intelligence just to be a good human being, right? And speak to people on a human level.
Didn't call you Dave.
again, the sharp you want to draw a contrast? There it is for me. One person called me Dave, pretended we're buddies.
You are Dave, though.
I mean, I am to a degree. The other person told me I was a first-round pick in his book. No, but I mean, come on, dude. Like, I'm not taking it for granted yet. Eventually, we're going to say, okay, I'm looking at my watch. Now, when are we doing it? I'm not there yet. To me, it's very simple. It's a pass-fail. Do we believe Jaden Daniels? Do we think we have it? Is he good? Even if he's not good yet, is he about to be good?
It's not super clear, though. So that's the only gray area that would be a hole in that. Because I agree with you. If Jaden Daniels is the answer, and we know that at the end of the year, record be damned, victory. Now let's go get what we need around him, and let's win some football games, and I'll see you at the NFC Championship.
Yeah, so my cop-out is incomplete, where if we need more time, we'll do it again.
But to me, incomplete feels like an L, too, in a sense.
Could be. Like, for example, if, let's say, God forbid, he sprains his ankle. It's a high ankle sprain in week two.
I don't mean injuries. And I mean, that's obvious.
Well, but you know what I mean?
But if he plays football all season long, and we're not sure he's the guy, that's going to be disappointing.
Fair, but I guess what I'm saying is I'm not even talking about one where he's got to miss a season or he misses 2 months. Let's say he's hampered at a certain point, or Terry McLaurin has turf toe that keeps him from being effective, like happened in the beginning of last year, whatever that was with his foot. A couple different things happen. You go, well, it's really hard to evaluate Jaden Daniels. Turns out that Brandon Coleman ain't the dude, and they got a journeyman left tackle, and their receiving core isn't any good.
Most of the time, though, there are very, very rare cases when you hear fan bases doing that kind of explaining away their quarterback when the quarterback ultimately becomes good. That's what you heard from Justin Fields' backers. That's what we heard with Haskins here. You know, guys that didn't end up amounting. Really, frankly, you overcome more often than not when you're good. Like, even Josh Allen is a good example. Josh Allen's first year was not great. Statistically, it was
bad.
No,
it wasn't.
But if you go back to the end of his first year, there were a lot of people, like me, who were going, did you see that throws this guy made? Do you see some of the rushing attempts that this guy had breaking? Like, it was pretty obvious he could play. I didn't think he'd be a top three quarterback in the NFL necessarily, but after one season, he had done enough. And that's my point with Jaden Daniels, is I think if you're on the field for the whole year, you're going to show the thing. You're going to show that you've got the breakaway ability, the propensity to run for 800, 1,000 yards, whatever it is. You're going to have touch and accuracy and make good decisions, or you're not as a passer. Could there be an incomplete? Yes, absolutely. There often is. My point is just, to me, it's not like three categories where it's like, he's the guy I feel great, or he's not the guy I feel bad. To me, incomplete gets filed into that one. Now, you could still pull him into the other bucket next year, but for the meantime, it's almost like a binary. You proved it or you didn't.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm willing to offer more patience, maybe. I don't know what the right word is to be different. I don't know, because I look at just you referenced Josh Allen. You like Josh Allen coming out. I didn't, right? I was wrong about that. You were right, so you deserve credit for it. But at the end of his first year, he had 10 touchdowns, 12 picks, and you're going, this? When is this going to happen? And then in the middle of the second year, the conversion happened. And so I guess my point is, if Jaden Daniels turns in 10 touchdowns, 12 picks, 52% completion percentage, that's not what people would be excited about
that
here.
That looks awful, right? On the back of a football card. But watch the games.
Sure,
Josh Allen, it's so funny to say it was an impressive 10 touchdowns.
No, but I'm with you.
But like, he did things that most guys can't do, and you thought, all right, we got work to do with this guy. Right. But this is an NFL pro you can build things around.
And I guess that's my point. So I would still offer that as an incomplete, but if you're going, I saw the thing that's good enough, I get that approach too.
And that goes back to like how you evaluate or view it, and I talk about this all the time. I just need to see the thing. The rest of it doesn't matter to me. I overuse my analogy of the scout watching a baseball pitcher. That is how I view quarterbacks, pretty much. Story being, a scout told me that he went to a game one time. He watched the first inning of this like high school pitcher. He touched 97, threw a really good breaking ball. He packed up everything he had, and he just called his GM
wrote a check mark.
And he's like, I like the guy. We should take him. That's all he needed to see. He's got that. He's got the breaking ball. He's got feel for spin. Like, we can figure the rest out. With a quarterback, I need the good stuff. I need the flash plays. Not once every month or so, but enough of them. Mm-hmm. And I just think generally, Herbert did it. You know, Burrow did it. You can tell pretty quickly. Doesn't mean it's gospel. You know, Griffin had some huge, unbelievable moments. It went the other way, maybe because of injury. So sometimes you'll get fooled. I'm not saying it's 100%. Right. But I do think over the course of the year, if he's healthy, we'll have a real good idea of what he is by the end of the season. And maybe more importantly, what Kingsbury is with him, what the fit is like, what that's going to look like. But here's where we should get to next. I want to ask you this question, and we can hit the phones. If, in fact, they're evaluating this as like this day-to-day, let's just get better, that's success this year process, is there anything that can happen that would lead to you being disappointed? Non-Daniels division. So if we're saying wins and losses, not the end-all, be-all, not how you're going to grade this thing, and maybe you guys do feel differently, and that's fine, 800-636-1067. What would be your answer to the question of how do you define success? But is there something that could happen, again, other than Daniels not playing well, that you would say, oh, that was an L for this group? Like, if they're really bad and the draft class isn't good, or what would that look like? Is that even possible in a year where wins and losses don't matter to you? Grant and Danny on the Fan.
I'm focused on our long-term goals, which is I want to be elite and playing deep into the playoffs or competing for Super Bowls season in and season out. And, you know, I'm focused on building, and I think this will be a better season than last year across the board. I think we're going to be, you know, obviously the identity that Dan and Adam have been talking about, you know, of, you know, the team is front and center in terms of us being competitive, of being, you know, punishing, of competing at the end. And obviously, you know, obviously we the record was dismal last year, and we better do better than that. But, like, really, I think this is going to be a way better season for all of those things and a lot of the intangibles. Jaden continuing, developing, hopefully, into what we think and all hope that and know that he can be. And so, a lot of intangibles, and then you should see improvement across the board on everything. Whether that, I've learned a long time ago in sports not to make like bold predictions, so I will not. This is sports, and I'll leave that to the bettors in Vegas and other things, people who are better at making predictions than I am. But you know, for sure, we're all going to have a much funner time.
That's Josh Harris Sunday in discussing what he would consider a successful year. I did take that to mean, though, let's not do the four-win thing, guys. You know, let's not go 2-15, mm-hmm. 3-14. You spent a lot of money. You brought in a lot of veterans. By the way, this is not a young team by any means.
It's one of the oldest teams in the league.
That's something that I think gets slept on when we're talking about rebuilding. Everyone says, oh, they're rebuilding. What don't you guys understand? Okay, kind of, I guess. Like, occasionally they are. When it works out, they say they're rebuilding, but they also signed a lot of veterans to 1 or 2 year deals. And when you just look at the ages of teams in this league, they're one of the oldest teams in the National Football League. The numbers I have were players with at least 4 years NFL experience. Dolphins have 37, Panthers have 35, the Commanders have 33, tied for third in all of football.
So again, that's usually reserved for the contenders. And being a, you know, one of the youngest teams doesn't guarantee you success. Being one of the oldest teams doesn't guarantee you anything either way. It's just interesting when you think rebuild or think retool, whatever, recalibrate, whatever you want to call it. It is a prioritization and deference usually to younger players, right? That's listen, I'm glad Bobby Wagner's here, but it's usually a lot less Bobby Wagner, a little bit more, you know, sixth round Sam out of your name that school to be your starting linebacker who can grow into the position.
For me, it just means that they shouldn't be horrendous. You signed enough pretty good football players.
That was clearly the goal.
Who have played for a long time, that you should not be a pushover. You should not be a picking in the top two or three team. You could have gone the path where that was the expectation and the plan and kicked it 22 Washington National style with a full-on rebuild and a AAA ball club. But you didn't do that. You went out and you got Austin Eckler and Bobby Wagner and real veterans that can actually play a little bit. So I think if you're Josh Harris and you sign those checks, you're going, we don't need to go make the playoffs, but let's not be terrible. Let's be better than we were in the win column, and let's make sure Jaden Daniels is the dude. 800-636-1067. So the question going to break, is there anything, and again, take Daniels out of the equation,
right.
So him being, you know, disappointing or something is an obvious answer. But is there anything that can happen other than Daniels this year that would actually bother you long term?
Yeah. And it's unfortunately related to Daniels, so it might be cheating. if the, what I'm viewing as the simply easily correctable unforced errors come back to bite this team and something happens to Jaden Daniels or he doesn't develop the right way or isn't as nearly as prolific and they're forced to just be, you know, Justin Fields like offense, AKA if the receiver position's a problem or the offensive line is a problem. These were easily addressable things to try to improve, and they did some, but not that much, and with cap space and draft picks, and they didn't do it.
Similarly, maybe not as pointed, if their draft class and free agent classes are really unproductive and bad, like Eckler struggles, there's not as much tread on the tire as we thought. Bobby Wagner falls off, age hits him at the wrong time. Brandon Coleman can't play left tackle, they've got to kick him inside. Luke McCaffrey by week 15 is just a dude on the depth chart who you never notice. And I don't think any of these things are going to be the case, but I'm just stringing some ideas together of bad draft, bad free agency, and you're 0-for-1 in both capacities. Now I'm feeling very different going into the offseason, and the honeymoon wears off a little bit with some of the people that we feel best about right now from a decision-making standpoint. Shane's in Virginia on Grant and Danny. What's up, Shane?
Commander Grant, how y'all doing today?
Body.
Friday.
Doing well.
It's just got to develop. You got to develop your players. Every week you got to start improving. And not just on the field, but off the field too. That's where it starts. You got to win in the office, and then you can win on the football field. This is the first time that this organization has no drama, drama whatsoever in the office that impacts the football team. So that's number one. Number two, you got a leader out there as a coach that these guys are going to respect. And I don't think they had that in Ron Rivera at all. I think they quit on him.
They initially did. I mean, at least that was what everybody claimed, right, was how much they loved him and played for him. Remember, it was very positive and rosy with Rivera early on.
Great, but he's a great guy, and you know, and what they say, but I don't need a great guy running my football team. I need a football coach. I need somebody who's going to get in the ice and make sure that they're making plays and go out there and look. Like I always say, the Barry Bryant stage, you know, that's the coach for me, Nick Saban. That's the guys that win. Look at their demeanor, but look how much success they have. Okay, that's what we need, and I think that we finally got some number one organized here, and now we it's a stepping stone. You just got to improve. All these players on this roster got to improve every week.
As the year goes on, thanks, to Shane. Your point, Shane. Good phone call, buddy. Thank you. That doesn't mean it's linear. Or like week one, you did this, so you got to be doing X by week two. But to his point, at a lot of positions, let's just feel better about the group in week 11 than week two. And it's not going to be this way forever. But in the first year of this regime, if somebody calls up and says, hey, if there's no crazy off the field stuff, if by the end of the year I like Dan Quinn more as a hire and I like Jaden Daniels more as a draft pick and I feel really good about Adam Peters as an evaluator and they went 5-12, great. Those are the most important positions in the organization. Let's rock and roll and let's go kick butt in the offseason and go win 9 games in year 2.
Yeah, go back and look at the first year of a new program here, right, for your data points. Now, the only exception is a 7-9 team that it took a team actively trying to lose in week number 17 or whatever the hell number it was for Philadelphia for them to get that 7th win and go to the postseason in the worst division in human history.
That was basically a 6-10.
That's a 6-10 quality team, but everyone else, it's usually 4-12, it's 5-11, it's 6-10 historically when you bring in and start your new program because you're basically, the first thing you're doing is power washing away the old. When they did that, they got rid of a lot of dudes that were here before. So expectations should be kind of tempered in that way.
Who is feeling the heat? Players, coaches in the NFL going into the season. That's next on Grant and Danny on The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the Free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.